Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Today on Inside Politics, jury selection hits a bump in the road. As of last night, seven jurors were seated in the People of the State of New York versus Donald J. Trump. Now, there are only six. CNN is inside the courtroom with all the breaking details and difficulties of finding a jury to decide the fate of the most famous and polarizing person in the world. Plus, the speaker's gamble. Mike Johnson's plan is to, quote, do the right thing and let the chips fall. What is unclear now is whether a right-wing revolt over his decision to push a Ukraine aid bill will cost him his gavel. And a Kennedy family reunion with a notable no-show. This hour, more than a dozen Kennedys will endorse Joe Biden on the campaign trail. It's a major show of force against one of their own, whose candidacy could ultimately tank President Biden's reelection. I'm Dana Bash. Let's go behind the headlines and inside politics. We do start in Manhattan, where Donald Trump is inside a courtroom right now as his legal team and prosecutors question dozens of potential jurors. Our colleagues in the room say that so far, the former president appears engrossed, listening to the people in the jury box give their answers. 96 people were sworn in this morning. 48 were dismissed right away because they said they couldn't be fair and impartial to Donald Trump. Nine others were let go because of conflicts, and it is unclear now how many others will make it through the next hour. There's even issues with seated jurors. Today, juror number two was excused after saying this to the judge, quote, aspects of my identity already have been out there in the public. Yesterday alone, I had friends, colleagues, and family push things to my phone, questioning my identity as a juror. CNN's Laura Coates is near the Manhattan courthouse, along with our colleagues Kristen Holmes and Kara Scannell. Laura.
This is really an important day. We're technically on day three now of jury selection. We began the day, ladies, having seven jurors seated, thinking that would be that much closer to the coveted 18, including the 12, and then, of course, six alternates. Then you had the step backwards from one person being dismissed and excused because of the compromising of her anonymity. But there's a lot happening in the courtroom about the questions. And the questionnaire, once again, a very key role here.
Yeah, so we are now in the throes of this after the pool was whittled down by those who felt they couldn't be fair and impartial. They've got nine jurors currently in the jury box, and that means that nine of them have gone through those 42 questions, learning a little bit about them. There's a number of people who work in finance. There's an attorney, a stay-at-home mom, and they're just given the biographical information at this point. Now, once they fill up once they fill the box, which has 18 seats, then they will begin the questions by the attorneys. And that's when the prosecutors and Trump's lawyers each get 30 minutes to ask questions to try to understand a little bit more about these jurors, a little bit more about their viewpoints, their views on both how they would interpret evidence, whether they could separate credibility from likability, and whether they could, from Trump's perspective, whether they have any sort of not obvious views about the former president. So that process we saw yesterday take place, which helped get down to the seven at the time. And then this will now begin again as they try to build up this box and get to the full jury.
And remember, we have yet to see any strikes right now. That usually takes after the 30-minute question begins by the different counsel. We haven't heard directly from Donald Trump today, though. We've heard from his fundraising arm, though.
That's right. We saw a fundraising text message that said, I just stormed into court. He also last week said, or on Monday, said he just stormed out of court. Mm-hmm. He's saying, join me. I'm springing the fight. You know, my gloves are coming off. This is obviously part of their tactic in the campaigning, is to use these court appearances, one, for him to talk, which he's not today, mm-hmm. but also to fundraise off of, to try to get support off of, to try to build in the poll numbers. One of the things to keep in mind here is that, yes, during the primary season, when he was getting indicted, these various criminal trials were happening, he did see a boost in polls. He did see a boost in fundraising. But one thing that some of his senior advisors are concerned about, even if they say publicly that this is going to help him, is how this is actually going to play out in a general election. We are in completely uncharted territory, and you're trying to get voters who are really not in your base. You're looking for voters who are not that, you know, far right. They're people who are more middle of the road. Does an 8-week potentially criminal trial actually help this at all, or is this going to hurt him in the end?
And by the way, we thought that we could have opening arguments as early as this coming Monday, but now you don't have, you have one less juror at this moment in time. And also at the very beginning of today, nearly half said they could not be impartial. That is significant. It was on par with what happened on Monday, but this could be very difficult still, Kara.
Right. I mean, I think that is a key number as this plays out because, you know, we were able to get 7 jurors initially from that first pool. Now it's a similar number, but if a lot of these jurors get struck for cause, meaning that based on their answers, the judge feels like there can't be fair and impartial, and if they have to bring in another panel, then we go through this process all over again. And every time you do that, there's the risk that you lose a lot of people who say they can't be fair and impartial, and then you have even fewer people to pull from.
And remember, Dana, they only have a remaining 4 strikes per each side right now. A total of 10 peremptory challenges are allowed, and they already used 6 in just this week alone. So whoever ahead, they'd think about that.
Yeah, fascinating. Thank you so much to all 3 of you. Joining me now, former federal prosecutor Elliot Williams and jury consultant Linda Moreno. Linda, I want to start with you. This is the kind of thing you do for a living, trying to kind of game out who the best person is to have on a jury for the client that you're hired to represent. Give us a sense of, based on your expertise, how you think it is going, given the extraordinary challenges of finding jurors who say they can be impartial and the defendant is Donald J. Trump.
It's good to be with you, Dana. It's extraordinarily challenging and difficult, but really it's to be expected. In all high-profile cases, jury selection can take a very long time. I was astonished at the number of jurors that were already selected, and I was not surprised when some came back the next day, today, and there were issues. And I think you can expect to see that really going forward until the whole entire jury selection is completed. And don't forget, that also includes 6 alternates, and each alternate under the New York criminal corporate law, each alternate also you get 2 strikes, 2 peremptory challenges. So I am now of the opinion this is not going to be completed by Monday. Mm. And profiling jurors can be both, can be of great value, but it can also be dangerous. And I would probably say that the most opinionated kind of juror is not going to be a juror who survives, but someone who is somewhat in the middle of the road, as I understand the cases now.
Elliot, I want to ask you about something that we understand from our colleagues in the courtroom is happening as we speak. Mm-hmm. Juror number 4. This is a juror who is talking to the judge as we speak,
yep,
as I said, because there are questions about whether everything that he said before he was picked was accurate.
Right. He is not going to be a juror in this trial for a couple of reasons. Number one, you can see that Judge Marchand is trying very hard to ensure that the proceedings be as fair to Donald Trump as possible. And having a juror that knowingly, apparently, might have been untruthful on his questionnaire and his questions, right there is sort of the kiss of death of this juror. That's point one. Point two is the juror was asked to come in early this morning and was apparently reluctant to come into court. Mm-hmm. Any chance they had of rehabilitating this juror and asking him questions and getting him to say he's honest were sort of out the door. So I think the judge is going through it right now, but in the interest of caution, I don't see this juror getting on this trial.
And Linda, this is kind of what jury selection is all about, right? To weed out people like this.
Exactly. And I anticipate you're going to see more of this. Yeah. I would agree with counsel that this juror will not survive. I think that Judge Marchand is being careful. He's making a record that's very good for both sides. But I don't believe he'll survive either.
So I just want to put up on the screen some of the very general and generic information, pieces of information that we have. This is just what these jurors' jobs are. Salesperson, corporate lawyer, IT consulting, although that's juror number four. We'll see if that remains. English teacher, software engineer, civil litigator. Linda, you, I know, believe that the notion of lawyers being on a jury is unusual, which I wasn't really aware of, and also could have a specific impact on the case ultimately. What impact is that?
Well, I think that, you know, the folklore is you usually don't want lawyers on your jury. And I'm speaking from a defense perspective, mm-hmm. because, of course, lawyers are going to be asked in the deliberating room by other jurors, well, what do you think of the law? What do you think of this element of the jury instruction? And so they become kind of a power broker. Mm. But here, I think that both sides might be, this might be to their advantage, because here there are some nuances. There are some issues, technical and legal issues regarding some of the elements like intent. And perhaps both sides would benefit from some clear thinking on those issues. And it just always, Dana, it depends on the case. Mm-hmm. That's why profiling, as I said, it's both advantageous but dangerous as well. It's always about the specifics of the case.
Linda was coming at it, Elliot, from the defense perspective. You are obviously from the other perspective. You were nodding your head. I should call you counsel. She did.
It was nice.
But I actually do want to just turn to another really important issue before the court and before the judge today, and that is that gag order on Donald Trump. He put on his social media platform yesterday, they are catching undercover liberal activists lying to the judge in order to get on the Trump jury.
He is baiting this judge into acting and thumbing his nose at the system. However, it is not entirely straightforward under New York law what happens next. And there's it's not to say that this is so remarkable. The simple fact is you can't just throw him in jail. Number one, the judge has to have a hearing regardless of what the judge chooses to do. You have to bring the defendant in for a hearing. Now, the question is it a civil proceeding where you're seeking to compel him to behave better in the future, or is it a criminal proceeding where you're going to lock him up in jail for things he's already done? And there's pitfalls to both of those approaches. What's telling is that the judge has waited 5 days. He's not having a hearing, I think, until the 23rd, which is quite significant. He's letting this all stay out there. Now that, again, getting back to what we were talking about before, is a way of perhaps trying to be more fair to Donald Trump than the judge needs to be, just in the interest of caution. But the idea that the judge is going to wave a wand and throw him in jail, which I think many people think, is simply not how it works, particularly in New York.
Yeah, and also there's the delay factor.
Yeah.
The minute he does that, the whole thing is delayed.
Is more time,
yeah. Okay. Elliot, thank you. Linda, thank you so much for your expertise. Up next, much more on the Trump trial and also on his campaign's message to fellow Republicans. If you use my name to raise money, I get a cut. And later, an American political dynasty and a show of force for President Biden intended to make clear to voters, RFK Jr. may have the Kennedy name, but does not represent the Kennedy legacy.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm a health reporter and have been for 15 years. And even I feel overwhelmed by some of the things I read about the stuff we're eating.
My colleague Meg Terrell wanted to take a deep dive into something you've probably heard a lot about recently. Ultra-processed foods. There is a lot to learn there, some fascinating stuff, and some of it is probably going to change the way you shop. Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is CNN Breaking News.
And we do have breaking news. Another juror was just excused in the Trump hush money case. We were just talking about this juror before the break. Laura Coates, you're here with me. The judge said that that he is going to be excused. They are now down to five impaneled jurors. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting. This is according to the prosecutors, Laura, that their research found that that juror showed records that he was arrested in the 90s for tearing down political advertisements. That's according to prosecutors again, not something that he shared during his jury selection process.
You know, one step forward, now two jurors back. As of yesterday, as of this morning, we had seven who were impaneled, only needing 11 more to get to that coveted 18, which included the 12 that must be seated, plus the six alternates. Now you've got this discussion happening about juror number four. We know some of the details. Remember, this is the one who found Trump fascinating and mysterious, and some would argue that that was alluring to Donald Trump as a defendant to have this particular person on the jury. There's some expression that he was annoyed about the amount of public information that was out about him. But also, remember, the jury questionnaire tries to get at various information about individual jurors to try to not have surprise moments. They're not surprised or caught flat-footed about the nature of what is being said, particularly after they are already seated in the jury. Remember, they only have a limited number of strikes, and as the defense counsel and the prosecution, they want to be able to preserve their peremptory challenges, a fancy way of saying I can get rid of you for any reason I want, for my own prerogative-based reasons, as long as it's not based on race or ethnicity or gender. And so they've used their strikes believing that they wanted this particular composition so far. And now they have two less people who will be there. The judge saying he cannot be there on Monday, which was when they thought opening was going to actually start. Also, the same juror, we believe, is the one whose wife apparently had what's known as a deferred prosecution agreement, which is what happens when somebody is charged with a crime and the prosecutor's office decides to offer them a probationary sentence where they don't have to serve any jail time, and they actually have to have certain conditions met. And if they meet those conditions during the duration of the time set, they then can have the prosecution go away entirely. That apparently also happened in the 90s, and we're discovering all of this now at not the 11th hour, but certainly at a time when there was already seven and now five.
And now five, and the process continues to get that number back up to 18. Laura, thank you so much. And Donald Trump may be stuck inside a New York City courtroom, but of course the 2024 campaign is not. To talk about the former president's courtroom / campaign strategy and much more, I'm joined by my great panel of reporters, CNN's Gloria Borger, The Washington Post's Leanne Caldwell, and Margaret Tolov of Axios. Let's just start with this breaking news. This is so fascinating because these are potential jurors. They are citizens, they are voters, and the machinations that they have to go through on the prosecutor and defense side, and the judge as well, of course, to find exactly the right group of people, we knew it was going to be hard. I don't think we realized it was going to be this intense and this multi-layered.
Well, a day ago, we thought it was going to be easier.
Yeah.
And now you realize how difficult it is. First of all, from the juror's point of view, imagine how unnerving this is. Yeah. You go in there, you're going to serve jury duty, and then suddenly it's the president, the former president of the United States.
Today apparently is awake.
Right.
And engrossed, according to our colleagues.
And possibly future president of the United States.
And it's unnerving because it can also be dangerous. And you're supposed to be anonymous, and there's a bunch of information that's being revealed about you. Mm-hmm. And these days, as we all know from Google, you can piece information together, and people can figure out who you are, and that can be threatening to people. And that's what happened today with one of the jurors who asked to be excused. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's a very, very difficult situation.
You've also got, for most of the last few days, I've been really interested in the jury questionnaire, and I think it's question number 10, which is what media do you mm-hmm. consume and what social media sites do you consume? And they offer about 19 choices. It's everything from the New York Times to Newsmax. It's TikTok. It's Trump Social. And there are slots for other. And you say what you're reading, what you consume, what you use. Or also, I don't consume any news is another choice. And that these are all... The fact that they're part of the questionnaire acknowledges that the news and information you do consume, that you seek out or your comfort space, could correlate very highly to your view of all of this to begin with. So that is the context in which we had been thinking about the fact that we're days into the process and only a third done, right? Now comes this new twist, which is like, are you going to have the jurors who do make the cut dropping like flies? And I think it raises questions about the future of the jury system. It raises questions about how you control privacy in this era where everything's knowable instantly.
Yeah, and because anonymity is so important.
They did in the E. Jean Carroll case.
Yeah, they did.
You'll recall. Yeah. So it can be done.
That's true. Let's shift gears a bit and to talk more about the actual campaign trail and more specifically Donald Trump and his campaign and what they are doing when it comes to fundraising. Our colleagues obtained part of a letter that the Trump campaign sent to candidates and campaign committees who are using the president's name, image, and likeness, and they want a cut. This is what it says, that they want a minimum of 5% of all fundraising solicitations. Any split that is higher than 5% will be seen favorably by the RNC and President Trump's campaign and is routinely reported to the highest levels of the leadership within both organizations. I mean, there's so much to unpack here. That is such a rich paragraph. One of our colleagues said it's basically like, you have such a nice campaign. It would be a shame if your campaign had anything happen to it, wouldn't it?
Oh my gosh. So this is not really unexpected. The Trump campaign is also looking for money in any way that it can find money. It is in a huge fundraising hole compared to President Biden. It has half as much cash on hand as President Biden does. The RNC had been suffering in fundraising. The RNC had been paying for a lot of Trump's legal bills, which is and also one of his super PACs have been paying for his legal bills. And so he has a lot of money that he needs not only to run a presidential campaign, but to help him with these multiple court cases too. And now I guess he is asking all candidates up and down the ballot to help him out with that.
Isn't a presidential candidate supposed to help candidates?
It's supposed to go the other way around.
I mean, this is just, traditionally, this is just the reverse. This is just like Donald Trump saying, I want a cut. And, you know.
That's his whole business model, though, right?
Exactly.
He gives his name.
He's licensing his name.
Yeah, exactly.
The franchisees of the Congress, Senate, and state and local races.
All right, everybody. Up next, let the chips fall where they may. Speaker Mike Johnson is promising a vote on $61 billion in aid for Ukraine. Will it pass? And will it cost him his job? We'll talk about that next.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
This time last year, the last thing Mike Johnson thought he would be right now is Speaker of the House. And this time next week, he may not be once again. Why? Because he is giving in and helping a Democratic ally in its fight against a Russia invasion. He's promising a Saturday vote on $61 billion in aid to Ukraine, plus bills to aid Israel and Taiwan. GOP hardliners like Marjorie Taylor Greene call it a betrayal. So can the rookie speaker hang on to that gavel? CNN's Manu Raju is, of course, on Capitol Hill and has been talking to everybody on the Hill. Manu, what's the latest?
Yeah, this is a key moment for the speaker, his future, the House Republican Conference, the House itself, as there's a discussion underway about making it harder to oust a sitting speaker. Of course, we saw the House being thrown into chaos last fall after the ouster of Kevin McCarthy, first time ever that happened in United States history. And now hardliners are threatening to do it again with Mike Johnson, Marjorie Taylor Greene leading the charge on that effort and warning that she may move ahead. Now, this is all, as this is playing out behind the scenes, there's an act active discussion about changing the rules of the House to make it harder to oust a sitting speaker, raising the threshold from now when one member can call for such a vote to many more members. That is still uncertain how that will go down. But these discussions have been played out on the floor of the House themselves, including with Congressman Matt Gaetz, who just engaged in a tense confrontation with Mike Johnson over this very topic. Now, when I asked Marjorie Taylor Greene whether she was ready to move ahead today, she did not rule it out.
It's unprecedented. This has never happened in history, and it's completely wrong. He owes our conference the truth, and he owes Republicans answers.
Does that mean you will go forward today? Will you go forward today?
I'm waiting to find out what's going to happen.
What's holding you back?
I'm a responsible person.
You spoke to the speaker. What was that conversation like?
Tense.
Why?
Because we don't want to pass this bill. We sought clarification that a change to the motion to vacate threshold would not be in the rule, and we did not get the answer that we wanted.
So this is very significant here, Dana, because the way this process is expected to work, first you have to approve a rule in the House. That actually sets the parameters for the floor debate, allows it to happen along straight party lines. Typically, that procedural vote, the rule, happens when Republicans vote for it, Democrats vote against it. This time, there are expected to be many Republicans on the hard right who are going to vote against it, meaning they need Democrats to carry it over the finish line. That will set the stage for the vote on the larger overall aid package on Saturday. But embedded in that rule could be that change for the motion to vacate, making it harder to oust a sitting speaker. And that is the rub. That is the source of tension right now on the far right. So if Johnson goes forward with that, he is inviting a fight with the right flank of his party. But he can rely on Democrats to carry it over the finish line, and essentially Democrats to keep him in this position.
Yeah. That is some fascinating politics right there. Thank you so much, Manu. Appreciate it. Let's keep the discussion going. And I want you to listen to what Mike Johnson himself said to Jake yesterday.
I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not focused on that. I'm focused on doing my job. Look, when you do the right thing, you let the chips fall where they may. I mean, that's my life philosophy, and that's how I govern here every single day. We try to get the best possible outcome for the American people, to move the ball forward for the American people. And I've got to stay focused on that every day and not all the drama.
Politico had a great headline that kind of sums it up. The YOLO speakership. Speaker Mike Johnson has entered his damn the torpedoes phase. For my parents watching, YOLO is you only live once.
It is a total YOLO moment. But look, here's what you have. These two separate things that have become fused. What is the future of Ukraine and the U.S. posture towards telling Russia, cool it, back off. You can't just invade other countries. And this internal drama inside the House Republican caucus about whether a handful of people get to control the majority of the leadership. You've got a clear majority of Democrats, but also a clear majority of Republicans in Congress, in both chambers, who believe that it's vital to the U.S. national interests and to the future of democracy to support Ukraine.
I want to bring in something that you reported this morning, Leanne, which is House Speaker Mike Johnson hasn't talked publicly about Chamberlain or Churchill. But he leaned into the analogy by describing himself as a wartime speaker. So is this his Churchill or Chamberlain moment, or is that maybe a little too much?
Well, it is a saying that has been used many times on Capitol Hill this week from Republicans and Democrats. Leader Jeffries, Chairman McCall as well. But I asked yesterday, Mike Johnson, I said, why are you willing to lose your job over this, over Ukraine? And he gave an extremely emotional response saying, look, I have received all the briefings. I believe the briefings. He said, I think that this is a moment in time that history will judge me, and I'm going to make the right decision. He said he has a son going to the Naval Academy, so he doesn't want his son having to go fight Russia. He wants the Ukrainians to do it. And so I think that there is this moment that Speaker Johnson has frustrated a lot of members because it took him so long to make a decision, but he has made the decision regardless of the consequences. And this idea to raise the threshold on the motion to vacate, this was pushed by a lot of some conservative members, but the ones who want to govern are encouraging Johnson to move forward with this. Johnson hasn't made a decision yet. But there's so many dynamics happening in this.
And again, just so people understand, the motion, embedding motion to vacate, changing the threshold.
Sure.
What it does is, if it passes, it makes it harder for for them to pull this again, to get rid of a speaker to sort of lower the chaos threshold.
Yeah. You know, but what we're also watching is the transformation of somebody from a backbencher into a leader. And, you know, as a backbencher, Johnson was not where he is now politically. And we've seen this transformation, and we've seen it with leader after leader, whether it was John Boehner or McCarthy or whatever. And now he is acting as Speaker of the House rather than as the backbencher he was. And he finds himself on the opposite side of his former compatriots. And that is what often happens with leadership.
Everybody stand by, because there are now five official jurors coming up. Hiccups in the jury selection in the trial against Donald Trump that we've been talking about. We're going to go back to the Manhattan courthouse after a quick break. From 7 to 5, a whirlwind morning in the Donald Trump trial saw two jurors get asked to leave and not come back. I want to check back with CNN's Laura Coates, who is live near the Manhattan courthouse. So, Laura, look, on the first one, it was because she said that too much of her personal information got out. I want to say for the record that CNN was very careful and is very careful about the identity of these jurors. Others are not so careful. But more broadly, based on your experience, did the judge maybe make a mistake about not limiting the information that even can get out? And is the judge reworking it now?
You know, the idea of preserving the anonymity of a juror is so important. We talk about the effect of a gag order and why you don't want someone to make a statement that could be threatening or intimidating in any way. Well, anonymity goes hand in hand with that proposition. You want to make sure that jurors who are called to perform a civic duty, they're not signing up for this. They're not raising their hand and saying, hey, coach, put me in. They're being asked to perform a civil service by participating in our justice system. And we reward them with at least anonymity to be able to do that without fear of reprisal or unwanted attention. And so that was always supposed to be the goal here. But as more information is released about these particular jurors, and frankly, there could be the coinciding of them telling friends and family that they, in fact, are on a jury and putting two and two together, and the information has been detailed, could be part of the issue. This is going to be a big problem going forward, and the judge will likely have to be all the more cautious about what information is allowed to go out into the public to preserve the anonymity and provide a fair and just system for not only the defendant in this action, but of course the jurors in this particular box. And remember, we haven't chosen all the jurors. There are still prospective jurors who undoubtedly are hearing about this and saying, should I be concerned?
That's such an important point. What's happening in the courtroom right now?
Well, now they're continuing to have more discussion with just jurors who are answering that questionnaire. Remember that 42-plus question questions are coming out in the written form, asking everything from the more mundane about where you're from and maybe your employment to questions that are far more pointed about your knowledge of the defendant and any opinions you might have about that particular person, whether you've attended rallies or anti-Trump rallies. Also, a really important question here that has come up that caused at least one dismissal of a juror is question 19. This has to do with whether or not you yourself have been arrested for a crime. It has been revealed that at least one person did not answer that truthfully. That's going to come up time and time again, unless they're prudent and cautious about getting all the information through the voir dire.
All right, Laura, thank you so much. Appreciate that. And coming up, remember this.
It's time again for a new generation of leadership. It is time now for Barack Obama. I'm proud to stand with him here today and offer my help, offer my voice, offer my energy, my commitment to make Barack Obama the next president of the United States.
The Kennedy family changed the course of the 2008 Democratic presidential primary when Ted Kennedy, you just heard there, his niece Caroline Kennedy, endorsed Barack Obama, not Hillary Clinton. Today, the next generation of Kennedys is hoping to do something similar with Joe Biden. We'll talk about that next. Now to a very public family feud. More than a dozen Kennedys will appear with President Biden in Philadelphia today. It's a major rebuke to the Kennedy trying to get on the ballot this November. Here's what RFK Jr.'s sister, Carrie Kennedy, is expected to say. She's expected to say, in part, "I can only imagine how Donald Trump's outrageous lies and behavior would have horrified my father, Robert F. Kennedy, who proudly served as Attorney General of the United States and honored his pledge to uphold the law and protect the country." And my panel is back. When we were in commercial break, we got big news on this subject, and that is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has now qualified to be on the ballot in the very important swing state of Michigan. So let me just put up a map of what we're talking about right now when it comes to RFK Jr. and ballot access. It's a little bit behind because this just happened. He is now on the ballot in Utah and Michigan. The other states that you're seeing there, New Hampshire, Hawaii, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, South Carolina, the important ones, of course, swing states being Nevada, Arizona, and Georgia that are left, those are states where he or his super PACs or his campaign say that he has the signatures, he just hasn't qualified. Again, the big news is Michigan, there will be RFK Jr. on the ballot, so people are going to have that option as opposed to just Trump or Biden.
Well, and that's a threat to Joe Biden, and that's why you see the family getting together today to say we're for Joe Biden. I mean, you can make the case both ways that RFK Jr. could be a threat to Trump and to Biden, but I think the fear is, particularly in a state like Michigan, could be a real threat to Biden, and that's what the Kennedy family is worried about. And, you know, Biden has a bust of Robert Kennedy in the Oval Office and has always been an admirer of the Kennedy family. And so I think personally, this must have some impact on him as well to see RFK Jr. doing this.
And to remind people about why Michigan is so important, it's not just a battleground state, but it is also a state where there is a very active organization to try to defeat Biden of Democratic progressive voters over the issue of Israel and Gaza. And so it's critical. And the President Biden is obviously taking this very seriously because of the show today with all the Kennedy family members. But also they're putting money to try to ensure that this third, that RFK Jr. Gets as few votes as possible, because they do think that in 2016, third party candidate Gary Hart was in fact a spoiler for giving Donald Trump the White House.
Yeah.
When you ask in polls early in an election cycle how people feel about candidates, their name recognition is a huge part of the answer to that. And over time, typically, you know, in olden times, like 4 years ago, the closer you get to the general election, the more actual details about somebody's policies and their stances and who they are and what they believe sink in, and it changes or it modifies that. And so lesser known people get more name recognition. The people who were just coasting on name recognition get more defined. There's a big difference this year. One is that the Kennedy name is so ubiquitous that it's like instant name recognition for everybody. But the second is that we know in this cycle, fewer and fewer people are actually consuming mainstream news. Mm-hmm. Many people are turning to social media or just getting a snippet or a meme or an impression. And what we hear from people is like in focus groups, I liked the Kennedys and it sounds like he's offering something different. And Biden's big challenge is, I think, going to try to be to pierce that and define him more clearly away from the family name, more clearly what he believes.
Yeah, and you talked about Michigan and specifically the large Arab American community there. The other part of the demographic that made up the Biden coalition are young voters. Mm-hmm. And if you look at, there's a new Harvard IOP youth poll that looks at where people are under the age of 30. Joe Biden is still ahead. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. gets 8% of that vote. Then if you look at that choice without third-party candidates, Joe Biden is way ahead, 56% to Donald Trump's 37%. There's actually, we can talk about this another time, a very interesting gender split, a lot more women than men. This is the thing, this is the series of numbers that I want you to look at because I think it's very telling. If you look back to John Kerry in 2004, the Democrats who got at least 60% of the youth vote?
One.
One.
Right. And Biden is not doing as well as he was doing in 2020 yeah. by a long shot. Yeah. And I think that's a problem for them. Part of that is the progressive mm-hmm. vote. Part of that is the economy. And when you talk about RFK Jr., that could be name recognition, right?
2 points, 3 points makes the
exactly.
difference.
Huge difference. Yep. Thanks, everybody. Very busy day. Appreciate it. It's probably only going to get busier. Thank you for joining Inside Politics. CNN News Central starts after the break.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.